As Marner has been closing in, and we've heard lots about it on this consecutive point game streak that he's on, that he's now equaled. And listen, getting a point and scoring a goal in today's NHL, it's hard to do. There was a time in which scoring in the NHL was a lot easier to do. To my point of, I would have thought, you know, a franchise been around as long as the Leafs, the record would be longer than 18. Am I totally off on that, or do you kind of go, yeah, it does seem like it should be longer?
I you know what? I don't even know, because I'd have to see like what the franchise record in Montreal and what the franchise record in Boston and Chicago. And I think Patrick Kane just set Chicago's at like 22 or 24
right.
a few years ago to start the season. So, and maybe part of it is because the Leafs were so terrible in the 80s when it was easiest to score. Like, think of like they were not good that decade
right.
and they didn't have star players. So maybe the time when most franchises streaks would have been recorded, they were garbage. So that probably has something to do with it as well. So I don't want to diminish for a second what Mitch Marner is accomplishing. Nope. You own a record for any franchise, let alone an original 6-1 for an all-time thing. That's very impressive and deserves full credit.
How impressive have you been with Johnny Tavares? Because I think we talk about Nylander a lot, Matthews, Marner, and quietly, under a lot of pressure at the end of last year, he's come back and right after a point a game.
But that's what he does. Like, even last year when he, you know, struggled, apparently, like, he was basically a point a game player still. Like, you know, that's just kind of what he does. He's been good. He's been consistent. He's produced points. He scored lots of goals. Generally speaking, early on, it was driven by the power play, which is okay. Power play production is part of what he is supposed to do. But he has settled in nicely as the number two center in Toronto. I think for a little while, he wasn't jockeying with Austin Matthews, but he was like a 1B. He's not really a number one center to the same degree anymore. He's the second center, and he's a really good one. Quietly goes about his business, plays well with different players. So, he, you know, the first 10 games were with Nylander. The next 10 have been with Marner. He's equally productive with both. His 5-on-5 game has actually gotten a little bit better. And I wonder if a summer of relative good health after a couple of tough summers and good training, he worked on his foot speed and his fitness and trying to get a little bit quicker at his age, and a half second quicker has been an improvement for him. But I'm not surprised. Like, I think I was asked before the season started, what would Tavares do? I'm like, he'll get you 34 goals and 81 points. Like, he does it all the time, and he's going to do it again this year.
All right, Sens. we're just trying to come up with through the morning. It was just kind of a game last night versus New York. Let's start with, I want to get your, because I don't think we've asked you this before, this whole coming back from a long road trip out west, first game back home. Statistically, I didn't know the stats. You know, the guy that Lee that hosts the afternoon show. Good sample size, 10-year window from 2008 to 2018. Team that's been on a 3-game road trip or longer only wins 37% of the first games back home. You lived it. You lived playing in the NHL for a dozen years. Is there something to it, as the statistics would seem to tell you?
Clearly, I guess the numbers don't lie, and there is. So, like, there's a few different reasons why this might happen. So when you leave a West Coast road trip, you have two options. You either take a red-eye home after the game, which does, like, as comfortable as the planes are, no one's feeling sorry for anyone. It's a red-eye. It still messes up your day, and you don't sleep normal, and it kind of sets you back for some fatigue. Then you usually have a day off, and then you get back to work and practice and then go to play. So, like, that red eye is not good for your energy levels and your sleep pattern, which are important. If you don't fly home and you stay overnight in Vancouver, LA, Anaheim, Phoenix, that's also not good for your sleep patterns and doesn't help your energy levels. And, you know, guys will go out and have a beer and, you know, hang out and visit. And then it's, you know, 2 a.m. West Coast time, which is 5 a.m. our time, and you're sleep patterns are all messed up, and you're fatigued. So no matter what, when you come home, you're probably going to be tired, even if you did everything right. And then you get home, and whether you're young guys, you don't have a family around, that's one thing. If you have a family around, like plugging back in if you've been gone for a week, and you're, you know, taking the kids to school or cleaning up the house or doing your chores or going to, like, you know, you're kind of just kind of integrating back into your day-to-day routine, which is, again, taking a slight bit of focus away from playing the game because you're not worried about it. And the last bit is, you know, I wonder, like, you know, flying home, not practicing generally because they don't practice the first day after they get back just so everyone can rest and do whatever, and then jumping either into a game or maybe one more practice in a game, if that is the best prep for it, and you bundle all that up together, and it's a real thing. Like, you can talk to yourself, and teams have tried different things, staying over, flying home, you name it. And I don't think anyone's really found a solution to that issue, which is why, teams that are in the East that don't usually deal with tough travel, I think probably struggle even more, because you're not used to kind of this, you know, in Ottawa, what's great is, like, no matter where they play, just about, they're in their bed by 1 a.m. if they go back to Ottawa from wherever they played. And that's not the case when you go out west. So,
right.
Yeah, there's something to it. We know about it. We hear about it. And there's something to it.
Hmm. Now, you lived it both ways, because you played, the majority of your career in East Coast-based teams, including the Leafs. But you also played in Phoenix, so you played in the West. Mm-hmm. Did you find when you went on a long Eastern trip when you played for Phoenix, same deal? Or was it different because you're gaining 3 hours on your way back?
It was different. So when you play in Tampa and you fly home and you leave right after the game, you take off at 11 and you land at 12. And, like, your body is predisposed, even if you've been on the road for a week, like, your body naturally is on the time clock of wherever you're living in Phoenix. So, no, it's different on those trips from the East. But let's not make any mistake. Travel is so much harder for West Coast teams, Western Conference teams.
Right.
Like, it's not even close. Like, playing for Toronto and Montreal, it was a walk in the park in your own bed by 12:30 at night. Whereas in Phoenix, the closest team we went to was LA, which took an hour and a half to get to, and then an hour to drive to wherever airport you're going in LA. So, the teams in the Western Conference do not want to hear any complaints from Eastern teams about anything about with regards to travel.
And the only other part when you landed in Phoenix in December is realizing you live there. And the next stop is the golf course. That fires up the engine. MJ, you look at last night, kind of magnified, and I guess where the energy's a bit down, you look at a game like last night, and when the margins are so close, the simple D-zone coverage that comes back to bite you is the reason why. I understand all the things that come into this, but it's hard to kind of look at the program and feel bad in that they're still making the same mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, it was a decent start last night for Ottawa, all things considered, the first period, and then the game kind of got progressively worse for Ottawa and better for the Rangers. You know, some broken plays, but tip drills, and I think you mentioned it, Simmer, it's tight margins, right? So everyone makes mistakes all the time. But when you score a few more, or you're getting a few more saves, or whatever, you know, things are going well, they don't tend to end up in the back of the net, or if they do, they don't cost you points and feel as heavy and as important and as numeral, as many mistakes as when they do. And so I think, I think it's all part of that. They're not a perfect defensive team. They don't have perfect defensive players. I think generally speaking, you know, their system play has been not bad this year. Like, I don't think they've been completely porous in their own end, completely porous without the puck. There were some mistakes made. Some sticks weren't tied up. And Ryan Lindgren all of a sudden turned, was getting all points left and right with his point shots. But it's just the margins. Right now, the way Ottawa is going in the standing, game to game, with their goaltending, there's no room to make mistakes, and that's a tough way to play hockey.
I didn't like the body language of Stutzel, of course, doing that. I mean, I know players hate when goalies do it. Just thoughts on that and how you might handle that as a leadership group?
Yeah, like, I mean, being demonstrative, being emotional is everyone operates differently. I get what you're saying, like showing your frustration or your exasperation with what's going on is not healthy. And I imagine the leadership group, now it's always tricky because, Brady's the leader and he is the leader and he's mature enough and has the respect to say whatever to anybody. But, when he's basically the same age, a kid as well, sometimes like, hey, don't behave that way. Take it from me. I know, like, what do you know? You're like 6 months older than me. You've been around for six more. But I think maybe pulling him aside saying, listen, not going to come down on you for the one time event, but everyone knows when bad things happen. Everyone gets frustrated. When you react strongly, it draws attention to the mistake, yours or somebody else's, and we're trying to be positive and work through that. And so that's maybe not the most helpful way to go about doing it. So next time, maybe just try to corral the emotion in that moment and don't make, an irritated, exasperated situation worse. And I bet he would learn a little bit as he gets older and he hears that message that, you know, maybe it's not the same. Maybe it's more muted reaction next time.
Is that something where it might also be easier if Giroux delivers that as opposed to Kachuk, who's more of a... I mean, they're both peers, but you know what I mean? There's a huge difference.
100%. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Chabot, Giroux for sure, because Giroux, I think, would have walked in that room and by the force of his personality and the strength of his career would have the instant respect of everyone. And, you know, Tim Stützle, like, and he's also been a star. Like, there's some element to that. Like, don't just, like, you know, Holden could say it. He's been around a long time, but there's something different when a star that you kind of are aspiring to be like, have a career like, were to say it. I think it would land truer. And that's one of the advantages of having Claude Giroux around, is that he can do that kind of stuff to help Brady and the rest of the leadership group.
We spent a bunch of time yesterday in the lead up to the game, because anytime the Sens will play the Rangers, a lot of focus on the 2020 draft and Stützle and Lafreniere. What are your thoughts just overall? I mean, you do some Ranger games and you're in New York quite a bit, NHL Network and stuff. What are your thoughts just on the development curve of Alexis Lafreniere?
It's been slow. I mean, it's like, you know, it's slow and steady, I guess, like not nearly as impactful as the Rangers would have hoped so far. My concern with him would be, like, he was so good in junior, but, you know, I think he's a late birthday. So he was, you know, drafted a year later. And you wonder if at his draft year level, he was just bigger and stronger and more mature than the guys he was playing against. And that made him better, but, like, not by the degree that the stats made him look. And he had a great World Junior, of course, as well. And when you get to the NHL, like, if you're just stronger than everyone in college or junior or Europe, you're not going to be stronger than everyone by a lot in the NHL, because nobody is. And, you know, if you're an okay skater at junior, you're going to be a slow skater in the NHL, because everyone is faster. And I think that's what's happened to him. Like, the things he was better at physically, like, I still think he sees the game and I still think he has good, great hands. But I think the physical tools that he was better at in junior, he's not better at. He's not stronger. He's not faster than people here. And so he's having a hard time finding open ice. And that's been his challenge. You know, I've seen lots of redrafts. And not to suggest anything Lafreniere is not a bust or anything like that, but Tim Stützle would be the first pick in that draft if they were to redo it. Because he's got the dynamic skating. And I think that's Lafreniere's bigger issue. And you can dump Lafreniere and Kako with second overall and Philip Hedel. Like, all three of those guys are lumped together with the Rangers as guys who they need to take a step forward and haven't done it.
Do you see them taking a step forward? I'd say even more on Kako, where when you start to look at those stats and the lack of progression, MJ, you kind of are what you are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long you get, Simmer. 3 years, 4 years, it's a young man's game. Like, most players that are going to be really good players, by their fourth year, by the time they're 22, like, they're well on their way to becoming a player who's that good. So, you know, Kako, he's got 8 points this year. He's in for his career, he's averaging a point every three games, a goal every six games. Like, it's just, you know, he's an NHL player, but I don't know if you're anticipating a bump to even top six production. I mean, at this point, I just don't know. I would have thought, like, I think Lafreniere will probably settle into a 20-goal, 55-point guy. I don't know if Kako even gets to that. He might just be like a third, fourth liner who, you know, could play in the NHL but never really produce a ton because, you know, 4 years. He's in his fourth full season with the Rangers, albeit, you know, disjointed years sometimes with COVID. But he's past the point of saying, well, he's young. He probably should be figuring out to a greater degree than he has. Mm.
Just a final one on the Sens. They're pacing right now at their current pace. We're at the quarter pole, so, you know, you kind of are what you are. They're pacing for 63 points this year, which last year was 73, and everybody was going, well, they should get into the 80s. Right now they're pacing at 63. So our question this morning to everybody on our web poll is, are they even going to get to 73? What do you think?
Yes, I think they will. I think they will. I still believe that they are playing better than their results, which rings hollow because you are what your record says you are, and that's all that matters. But I think that they've played better than their results, and so they'll climb closer to 500.
All right.
Which means 73 points. I think they probably get over that. As long as their goaltending, you know, holds up and is decent, they'll get there. They're not going to get to the playoffs, but they're going to get back to that no man's land where you're not getting the first pick, but you're going to be well out of the playoffs, which might be worse. It might be better, really, to get 63 points than it would be to get 75 at this point.
Especially in this draft.
In this draft, especially. If you get Fantilli or you get, I mean, Bedard, obviously, that would be something special if you could.
Have you guys been looking at the 2025 draft, though? I'll tell you what.
We'll leave that one alone. All right. You got the Sens and Rangers game tomorrow night on TSN, so you'll see firsthand down at MSG. So safe travels. Really appreciate the time and the insight, as always, and look forward to chatting with you again next week.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.